Yes, it's that time of the week, and we're joined by Dennis Stewart. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, my dear. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. All the better for seeing you.
That's good. I'm very chuffed about that.
Oh, dear. Now, we've been talking about sort of Astragalus. Well, we've been
trying
to
talk
about Astragalus for the last few weeks, and now you want to finalise it today. We'll try to finalise it today.
Look, we'll try to finalise it. And hopefully I'll tantalise listeners by telling them something about this herb and how it was made famous as a result of the insistence of Mao Zedong.
Ooh.
That's interesting, isn't it?
That is. I don't know what Mao Zedong is.
Well, he was the leader of the Chinese Communist Party and that took over from the nationalist Chinese. He was a famous man. You must remember him waving his little red book and swimming in the Yangtze River.
Oh.
But look, he was also obviously a great nationalist. I don't agree with his politics, but he was a great man. And one of the things that he wanted to do was to reestablish Chinese identity in all things, not just politics, but all things, one of which was to look at their great tradition of natural medicine, particularly based on herbs. And in that context, Astragalus emerges as a fascinating topic to discuss.
And we're talking about Astragalus and a little bit of politics. I've just worked out that I do know who Mao is. And
you've done very well.
After having read Mao's Last Dancer. I just didn't understand how you were saying.
Please don't look upon me as any great expert on Chinese language, Chinese culture, or even Chinese medicine. I have a very basic understanding of all of those, sufficient to get my way through, put it that way.
And we're talking about Astragalus, and I'd like to know how did Astragalus emerge?
That's a very good question and a very sensible question.
For a change.
I'll preface it by saying that what Echinacea is to Western herbal medicine, particularly Anglo-American herbal medicine, Astragalus is to Chinese medicine. So that puts it in perspective. Echinacea is the leading immune supportive remedy in traditional Western herbal medicine. Astragalus is in Chinese traditional medicine. And you have to realise that Chinese traditional medicine is many, many years of age. It's thousands of years. Its culture, its tradition, its literature competes with Ayurvedic medicine as far as the length of time that it's been in existence and utilised. But the thing was that up until Mao Zedong, the Chinese revolutionary leader that led China to independence from a nationalist government, and please, I'm not pushing any particular viewpoint here, but it is important to see what happened then. That what Mao Zedong did, arguably, was try to get Chinese culture, Chinese ideas, Chinese knowledge, Chinese skills more accepted and more mainstream and to the benefit of the Chinese people. Remember, at the time when he came to power, China was a very, very poor country, a very poor country. And one of the ambitions of that man was to try to retrieve what he considered to be the rightful place of China in the world. And part of that was not just associated with the political propaganda that was delivered to the people, but also to retrieve as much as possible Chinese culture, including Chinese traditional medicine. He was, the argument is, and this is what I subscribe to, that he wanted to free China from the domination of not only Western culture and Western politics, but he wanted to introduce again in medicine some of the ideas that China had depended on for so many hundreds, if not thousands of years. And so part of what he did was not throw aside Western medicine, far from it, but what he did was encouraged the study and reintroduction of herbs, particularly mainstream remedies that had been used to address serious diseases, we would say immune depressive diseases. And in that context, the herb Astragalus membranaceus emerged as the leader of a group of remedies that came together at the insistence of this movement in China to re-establish a role for Chinese medicine, not to the exclusion, let me emphasise this, not to the exclusion of Western medicine. Mao Zedong was too smart for that, and China had a very useful Western-based system, but what he wanted to do was free the Chinese people, this is how it goes, from dominance of Western ideas and to free them from just dependence on Western medicine. And he did that very successfully in what now we know, even in our culture, as Chinese traditional medicine, acupuncture, Chinese herbs. That is accepted in our country. I practiced acupuncture in this town in the 70s. I was the first to do it as a result of studying Chinese medicine and acupuncture particularly. Now we have Mao Zedong's, how can you call it, well, assault on Western medical dominance to a point where his system of medicine, Chinese medicine, is, if you like, a complementary system. That's the term that I love to use, as you know. I don't like the term alternative medicine. I don't believe there is any such thing. There are various complexions of medicine. There is mainstream Western medicine, which is based very rigidly on science. It's what we call a biomedical model. And then there's also complementary medicine, one of which is Chinese medicine and particularly Chinese herbal medicine. Astragalus therefore became, even in Western countries such as Australia, a leading herb, particularly to address immune depressive conditions, particularly in people whose health had been compromised by serious disease episodes, where it was used as a retrieval herb, a recovery herb. I like the term to use that with reference to Astragalus, a retrieval or a recovery herb. And that's why it was so important, that I argue is still important, in dealing with what we call post-COVID syndromes or post-viral syndromes. I think I've proven the efficacy of that. There's a little bit of a story about how Astragalus really made an impact. I'll talk about that in a moment. I'll give you a chance to say your piece.
Well, we're learning about politics. We're learning about health.
You can't separate them, my dear. You can't separate them.
If you've got a question for Dennis, it could be, well, maybe it might be politics related, who knows?
We can handle that.
No, let's not. Anne from Cardiff South has done. Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Very well,
this
Anne.
Afternoon, I'm sorry.
It's all right, Anne, it's all right.
It's gone very quickly.
It has indeed.
Thanks for speaking with me today, Dennis.
Yep.
My granddaughter lives with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and to cut a long story short, she has a few issues with mozzie bites where when she's bitten at the site, she comes up really edematous above and below the site, very red, very raw, and is in a lot of pain, and that doesn't settle for at least 3 to 4 days, and so it's extremely debilitating for her. And I have read a couple of things about this, that it could be, normally they call it Skeeter syndrome, but it also could be related to mast cell activation due to her Ehlers-Danlos. And I'm just not sure, you know, I guess what I do is use AeroGuard on her clothing.
Yes.
And AeroGuard on her skin, but it doesn't always assist, you know. Those mozzies, female mozzies, seem to find her no matter where we go.
How old is the lass?
She's 11 and a half.
Okay.
Mm.
Has she been medically assessed or treated for the condition?
Well, all the doctor has given her Clarentine, antihistamine to settle her, which doesn't touch the sides, ice packs, nothing touches the side. And I said to him the other week, I said, maybe we need to go and have some allergy testing. Mm-hmm. But he said, look, we know that she's has an allergic reaction to the site, and really what you, all you can do is really look at preventative measures.
I think he's on. I think he's pretty right there. I think he's pretty right.
Look, I think so too.
I'll make just a few suggestions which may or may not be of use. One of the things that I emphasise is the role of what are called bioflavonoids. Now, you've probably heard me talk about bioflavonoids before, but they are natural substances and they are used as an oral supplement, either in a powder or a capsule or a tablet, and they are useful. And that's all I'll say. They are useful in helping lessen the inflammatory response to many things that happen to us, and that could be anything from an allergic reaction, anything to a mild infection. So a diet that is supplemented by a bioflavonoid, usually with some vitamin C appended to it, something like, for instance, quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin with vitamin C. I frequently use that for people that have these sorts of syndromes where nothing else is seemingly doing much to prevent it. Your doctor is doing everything right, and the antihistamine is a very logical thing to address the problem if and when it occurs. But he's also right in saying that, look, you just can't depend on that. You've got to look at something a little bit more adventurous. So as a starting base, and only as a starting base, I would suggest that you discuss with him. These things are very safe, by the way. The supplementation with some quercetin and vitamin C as an oral ongoing supplement. Discuss that with your doctor or with your pharmacist. Now, the second thing that I'll mention is not well known, but it is associated with what's called homeopathic medicine. Homeopathic medicine uses minute quantities of substances to develop what are called potencies, which address conditions which normally they would cause if they were administered in macroscopic doses or people took them inadvertently. One of them is called Ledum, L-E-D-U-M, or some call it Ledum palustra, P-U-L-S-T-R-A, Ledum palustra. It's usually administered by those that practice homeopathy. I used to practice and I've actually taught it, but there are practitioners in this town that would be more competent than what I am to administer it. There are quite a few doctors, particularly around the Sydney area, that practice homeopathic medicine, which is universally used in Europe. Ledum palustra, in what is referred to as the 6C potency. Now, if that is taken, that is in homeopathic medicine seen as a useful potential agent to lessen seasonal allergenicity to various forms of bites, particularly mosquito bites. So there are two leads there. If you have difficulty getting hold of lead and palustra, which you might in this town, although there are pharmacies around that are compounding, and there are pharmacies around that also have homeopathic remedies, seek them first. But if you have trouble, contact me and I'll put you in contact with a couple of companies in Australia, one in South Australia, one in Melbourne, that I have long dealings with, who provide that particular potency. So discuss that with your doctor. Discuss it with your doctor. Get on the net. Get on the net and look at Ledum palustra 6C and look at the role of the bioflavonoid quercetin as an agent with vitamin C to potentially lessen reaction, inflammatory activity, perhaps even allergic activity.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it very much.
It's,
I really feel sorry for the little one, you
of
know,
course.
Very debilitating
of course.
For her. So,
of course. Yeah. Well, try that and
right,
let us
then.
Know. And if I can help you further, give my clinic a ring in New Lambton and I'll talk to you or help you get what I think you might have some difficulty in getting, particularly the homeopathic remedy.
Good luck with that, Anne. We've got Steve on the line. Thanks for holding, Steve.
That's okay.
Hello, Steve.
Hi, Dennis. Dennis, a question. Late last year, you were talking about a supplement to help ease bruising for people on blood thinners.
Yes. Okay.
I've just been put on a change of what's named by my cardiologist. I'm on Plavix and aspirin.
Okay.
And that's increased bruising substantially.
Quite significantly.
Yeah.
Look, normally, when we're dealing with a tendency for bruising, one of the things we think of is the bioflavonoid called rutin, R-U-T-I-N. Now, rutin, R-U-T-I-N, it is a bioflavonoid.
Yep.
And it is used as a supplement, particularly for people that are constitutionally prone to bruising. You find some people, even if they just knock something, their skin will bruise terribly. And in our literature, rutin is a supplement that can sometimes be useful when it's taken ongoingly as a means of lessening that tendency. It has something to do, I'll keep it rather brief, it has something to do with strengthening the small blood vessels which are so easily made fragile, and it could be useful. The rutin was found in many foods. It is particularly present in buckwheat, but we don't use much buckwheat, but rutin, the extract of that food or herb or whatever you want to call it, is extracted and could be useful. What I would be suggesting, however, is that this needs to be given the tick or the nod by your cardiologist. I have not got my literature in front of me to look at whether or not this would be contraindicated with the blood thinners that you're presently taking.
No, that's okay. I've got to see him in July after
okay.
having some stents put in last month. So
yes, I thought that might have been the
case.
See
how we go.
Look,
but I was just
that.
Trying to chase the name of it.
Rutin, R-U-T-I-N. Get on the net, Google it. Usually a good monograph or a good profile of the substance on the net will mention warnings or contraindications.
Okay. No, as I said, I'll speak to my cardiologist
good.
In July.
Good.
And I'll put up with the bruising till then.
Yeah. Look, if your bruising is serious and troublesome, a topical application only of arnica is useful for helping resolve bruises. It's a famous remedy, both in homeopathic medicine and in herbal medicine, but only for topical use. It should never be used for oral use.
So that was arnica.
Arnica. And you
okay,
can
thank you.
You can get an arnica cream or an arnica ointment very, very easily in most health outlets.
Not a problem. I'll give that a go. As I said, I'll speak to the cardiologist.
I want you to. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Good, good.
Next, we've got John on the line. Hi, John. How are you going?
Good, thanks. Yep.
How can we help you, John?
I had a few blood tests, and I keep coming back with high liver function levels. Doctor wants to put me on a pen sort of thing for 6 months, take a little injections once a week. I was just wondering if there's something else you could sort of try naturally, you know, to
John,
bring that function level down.
Okay. When you're talking in that language, are you speaking about elevated levels of your liver function, of your liver enzymes?
Yes.
Okay. So things like your GGT, your AFT, they would be considerably elevated to the point where your doctor is worried.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
If that is the case, my mind immediately springs to the, it is a famous herb, particularly throughout Europe, but also in most Western countries now, it's well known, and that is the herb St. Mary's thistle. Now, St. Mary's thistle goes under various names. Its botanical name is Silybum, S-I-L-Y-B-U-M, not Silybum, but Silybum Marianum, St. Mary's thistle. Sometimes also goes by the name of milk thistle. I prefer to not use that name because that is that can confuse it with other things. But St. Mary's thistle is renowned as an agent that can address a dysfunctional liver to some degree. And there would be no one that would have recommended St. Mary's thistle to so many people than myself. And as far as I'm aware, I pride myself on this. I shouldn't pride myself, but I do. As far as I'm aware, I was the first person to lecture on St. Mary's thistle in herbal medicine in Australia going back to the mid to the late 70s. It was not a herb in herbal medicine here in Australia that was popular. Our system, as I've said earlier, was very much based on an Anglo-American style of herbalism.
Yes.
St. Mary's thistle is distinctly European, but now is universally used by all systems of herbal medicine. And one of the best books to get a great profile on it is written by the late, great herbal medicine doctor, Dr. Rudolf Weiss, W-E-I-S-S. His text, simply known as Herbal Medicine, I have lectured from and consider it to be the most important reference other than the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia. And he has a section in that book, which you may well be able to get it off the net. He has a monograph on St. Mary's thistle, which is very, very credible, very significantly based on medical language and proving. If you want to get confirmation of that, look at Weiss's book, but discuss, because your terminology may not be exactly relevant to what I'm talking about, but if there is an enzyme elevation, I immediately think of St. Mary's thistle. Mention it to your doctor.
Okay, thanks, Dennis. I certainly will, and I'll look into that too, the book. And that, yep.
Okay, John, thank you.
Thank you very much, you. John. We've got Greg from Rutherford on the line. Hi, Greg. Thanks for holding.
Hi.
Hello, Greg. How can we help you?
Cellulitis, Dennis.
Yes, know it well.
Although I keep it very clean.
Yes.
And I put a top quality cream on it.
Yes.
Is there anything natural
okay.
for it?
Now, have you an ulcer there?
No,
it's
no.
It's not an ulcer.
No, no.
So there's no open wound or open lesion. It's just an area that keeps breaking open, becoming...
No, there's nothing breaking up and open as yet.
You're fighting against it, are you? You're fighting against it.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And, well, good on you. How many episodes of cellulitis have you had?
It's there on the ankles. It's been there for many years now, the last 10 years.
Yes.
I did get a bite on the foot.
Yes.
The leg got infected.
Yes, yes.
And antibiotics and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. You know? Well, cellulitis, as you would know, is a very serious and potentially very dangerous condition.
Yes.
It involves a lot of swelling, heat, redness and serious infection, which can spread rapidly. And that's why any episode of cellulitis, if and when it's occurred, immediately needs to be treated medically. Let me emphasise that, treated medically. And without antibiotics, we'd be in trouble. However, I see in my career, I have seen many people who look for ways and means of lessening the assertion of the infection. And I believe that there are a few things that have helped some people, and I'm couching my terminology in very conservative language because I do not want people out there to immediately think, Dennis Stewart has a solution for cellulitis. I have helped some people with cellulitis, and the approach is based on herbs, predominantly herbs, but also supported ongoingly as a supplement, elevated dosages of vitamin C, anything up between 500 and 1,000 milligrams a day.
Yes.
That is supported by what I've spoken about earlier, the bioflavonoid quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, E-R-C-E-T-I-N. Now, yes. Quercetin has some very useful benefits in lessening the assertion of inflammation and has a brilliant effect in encouraging improved circulation, particularly to the peripheries. So that is a starting base. The herbs that I work around are the ongoing taking of certainly the American herb Echinacea, certainly combined with the well-known herb calendula or great marigold, certainly combined with the herb called Clivers, C-L-I-V-E-R-S, and finally combined or prescribed with the famous American herb, not so well known now but foundational for my prescribing, known as prickly ash. Now, it would be difficult to get all those herbs individual remedies. So what I'm going to suggest is you've noted the herbs that I tend to work around. You would be wise to see a medical herbalist or a compounding pharmacist up where you are, or you could go into Sally Bowen's practice at Cessnock where those herbs are stocked, and a formula like that could be prescribed for you. As far as I'm aware, it would have no detrimental effect on the condition. All that it would do is support your natural anti-infection mechanisms, maintain a good circulation, and what I call a good drainage of the area. So it's worthwhile thinking about. You need, as I constantly emphasise, if you were to undertake anything like this, the ethical and right thing to do is to run it past your GP, your prime contact therapist. I could not see any reason why it would be a problem, but I don't know the whole medical regime otherwise that you might be on. That might have a bit of a bearing on whether these herbs are absolutely okay for you.
I use a Revitim daily.
Okay, that's good.
Boost the blood circulation in the legs.
Yep, well, that's pretty well what this formula is trying to do, but with Echinacea in it also, having a natural immune-enhancing effect on trying to lessen bacterial activity.
Yes, I totally agree with the lesser of the bacterial.
Yes.
Just got to watch it, Dennis.
Oh, look, I know... The reason I asked you whether or not it was an open lesion is that sometimes a lesion that is opened can precipitate very, very nasty infection. Where that is the case, years ago I developed, even before it was popular, what is now known as honey ointment. And that has, in my opinion, I know of two patients that I believe we saved their lower leg from very, very serious medical intervention by using the oral medicine approach, but dressing it or using it with medical approval with the honey ointment.
Okay, all the best with that, Greg. Hopefully you get some, relief, I guess. Next on the line, we've got Ruth from Tingara Heights. Hi, Ruth. You've got MS and restless legs.
Yes, hi Dennis.
Hello.
I've heard you talk quite a bit about restless legs over time. But something I've discovered and I wanted to share with you and everybody else.
Yes, good girl. By the way, you must have something serious to say because you have the name of Ruth. Now, my dear wife's name is Ruth and I've always listened to the advice that she has given medically. If you've got a name like Ruth, I'll certainly listen to you.
Oh, that's good. I've been in Scouts for many years and we've got a bush tucker garden over at Myuna Bay.
Yes.
And one night we were camping over there and one of my friends made up a big batch of lemon myrtle tea.
Lemon myrtle, yes.
And since then I've been drinking it and my restless, I tried baclofen and I tried everything else. Since I've been on the lemon myrtle, my legs don't get restless anymore.
And you just simply make a herbal infusion from it, tea, water-based?
With a bit of honey.
Yeah, based on the dried or fresh herb?
We usually use the fresh, but you can also get the tea bags, which are quite good. I've tried them and I didn't have before I had a tree.
Because the dried herb still would contain the large amount of essential oil that is in the leaf. And it is the eccentric, the essential oil that would indisputably, of that tree or herb, convey the therapeutic benefit. So if listeners out there have trouble getting the herb fresh or and want to try it, and I certainly appreciate you ringing in, because I'm a great fan, by the way, of native remedies. One of my colleagues and one of my first students, Andrew Pengelly, he and I formed in the RSL Club in Cessnock a number of years ago, the first Australian association to study and promote medicinal herbs from the Australian wild. That is a very well-established organisation. Now, if listeners want to know about it, I'll be happy to convey to you and listeners how you can contact the organisation, which holds workshops all over Australia, many of which obviously are held in the Hunter Valley. And we owe a lot to the work of Andrew Pengelly and his team subsequently. I was the first vice president, he was president, and has taken it through to great heights. And the herb you've mentioned, lemon myrtle, I've heard Andrew talk about, and that association would have a lot of information on it. I really appreciate your ringing in, Ruth, and I would encourage any listeners out there that know anything about bush tucker remedies to contact us, and particularly think about linking up with this now well-established Australian organisation. I'll help you do that.
Thank you so much, Ruth. Really appreciate your call. I also use cypress oil for... I've been banging on about cypress oil. I use that for my restless legs. But lemon myrtle tea sounds really good, so I'll give that a try.
But you know,
well,
you know what's doing here? Cypress oil is the oil from the cypress tree.
Yes.
That what she was talking about, lemon myrtle, it contains an essential oil. So it's all in the essential oils.
It's all in the oils. It is.
An oil ain't an oil if it's not an oil.
That's right. Oh, and now my computer's frozen, but we've got Dave on the line from Woodville, and he's looking for a tennis elbow remedy. So if you've got one, Dennis?
Oh, tennis elbow. Well, I need to ask the dear man, what's the history of it? How long has it been active? And what have you done so far, Dave?
All right, hang on. Are you there, Dave?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, fantastic. We've got about 1.5 minutes, so...
How long have you had it for, Dave?
I've had it about 3 or 4 weeks now. It's just a slight little lump. I had it once before and I got rid of it just by wearing an elbow brace, but you fixed me up with some plantar fasciitis with some celluloids, and I thought you might have had some for...
It's the same celluloids that I would use. You've probably used or got them from me before. SP96, S79, sodium phosphate and silica in the Blackmore's celluloid range. It rarely misses that condition. Rarely misses. Great system of medicine is the Blackmore's mineral celluloid range. Unfortunately, not as popular as it should be, but those two remedies are useful for this level of inflammatory activity.
Yeah, I thought it might have been the same as the plantar fasciitis.
So it is exactly right. Get back onto them, Dave. It should help.
Right up, beautiful.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks very much, Dave. Have a great day. All right, we've got about a minute left. I don't know. We were going to talk about your Chinese medicine, the politics, fusion therapy.
I promise listeners we'll conclude the topic next week by talking about the famous formula that's associated with what's called in China fushen therapy, which is basically a term meaning in conjunction with. And what that did was lead to the emergence of the Astragalus 8 formula. And I'll discuss that with great gusto and enthusiasm and encouragement next time.
Are we going to learn more about communism?
Oh, come on. I might have been way to the left as a young man, but I can assure you, I can assure listeners that I've pretty well dissented from all politics and, if anything, a little bit more anarchistic and a little bit more biblically based.
Okay. Well, it'd be great to talk about it next week. Okay. Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.